Random art tips and rambles with Rafi.
Hola, you amazing artists. It's Rafi.
And Klee.
And today we are going to talk about an expansion of what we talked about last week on the podcast about the art world versus the real art world. I got a comment on YouTube from somebody on my video of where to find art collectors. And this person gave me a long diatribe about how if you wanted to make a real impact on the world, you needed to find the right kind of collectors to collect your work. In not so many words, insulted, but didn't insult me by saying, like, you know, I understand that you have people that call themselves collectors of work, but you don't have real art collectors that actually make a difference in the art world.
Oh, so this is the casual collector versus the serious collector argument.
Right, exactly. Which is interesting because I have serious collectors, but this person assumes that I do not because I'm not in like Saatchi Gallery or one of these big giant galleries where they turn artists into a conveyor belt. What ends up happening in a lot of my videos is the stuff that I discuss flies in the face of conventional thinking when it comes to the art world. This person is coming from a perspective that a lot of artists come from, which is you need to go out, you need to cultivate the right kind of collectors, which means that you need to go to Art Basel and big shows and smooze and kiss some butt and find the kind of collectors that will make a name for you. That way you could be auctioning things off at Christie's and things like that. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with doing that if that's what you want to do. But as far as I'm concerned, the gatekeepers of the past are kind of outdated. And in that sense, it's almost like you are going and you are pursuing something in order to meet riches and gain all kinds of artistic notoriety out there. You think that that's what it means to become a real artist. And I think that the reason that a lot of people believe that that's what it means to become a real artist is because the only artists that you see on the news are usually these big name artists that is connected with one of these big name people and their piece auctions off for an unbelievable amount of money. I think that it's okay if that's what you want, but my stuff caters towards artists that that's not what they're looking for. That you are not looking to keep your fate and your art career in the hands of someone else. That you are willing to blaze your own trail and decide that you are going to take the reins on your art career. That you're the one that's going to be in control of your financial future. That you're the one that is going to decide where and when your art gets displayed. The thing that a lot of people don't understand about this art world is that when you are playing those rules, you are playing by their rules. And if you decide to not play by their rules, you end up becoming an outcast, no matter how popular or famous you become.
Yeah, they even have a name for it. It's called outsider art. And again, I think I've said this in previous podcasts, but I find it laughable that the art world of all worlds in this world is trying to live by this rigid set of guidelines and rules. And I guess it boils down to, we're not saying that any route you choose to take as an artist is bad. We're just saying, as an artist of all things, question what you're being told are the carved in stone rules for an art career.
I think a lot of it comes down to your own self-esteem as an artist and whether or not you're willing to call yourself an artist. There was something that this person said that really stood out to me. Which was, if you want your artwork to have a long-lasting impact, then it has to be in the hands of one of these tastemakers. I think the problem is there is a lot of news out there as far as the art market is, but when it comes to artists and looking at that dream of becoming a big-name artist out there in that art commodities market, that they don't think of what it actually entails and how much they'll lose their creative freedom. I don't think they think about that. Do you remember the name Alexandra Nechita?
No, I can't say I do.
Alexandra Nechita was an 11-year-old artist back in the 90s who like sold paintings for $100,000, right?
Interesting.
Yeah, she came out on Oprah. She did these abstract paintings and there was this big hullabaloo around her after having experienced that art market, that thing. She said that there was this love of painting that she had as a child, that she was kind of born with that wanting to paint. And that was her shtick, obviously, back then. And a lot of the big name galleries jumped on that. And they ended up making her career into what happens to a lot of these artists, which is you become a conveyor belt to supply artwork to all of these galleries. It has to be a specific style of artwork, and it needs to go out. And instead of like creating artwork because that is what you want to create, or you want to switch up your style, or you want to do something else, basically they become your manager and tell you exactly when and where to perform, when and where to create. And you have a contract that you sign with them that you have to do this thing that way.
Right. They don't want you to push the boundaries. They want you to stay consistent because you're a marketable commodity.
Exactly.
It's really very much the same as a musician who gets signed to a record label because they have some good songs. And then the record label wants them to consistently produce the same type of music because they know they can sell it.
People get typecasted, and essentially what ends up happening is that you become marketable for that one thing that you create. And then if you have somebody who's representing you or managing you, they want you to create that one thing, that one specific style, because that's what they know is going to sell. And it's 20 years later, and yes, she's benefited from that financially, and so she has no regrets for that, but it is now that she's able to create again for the sake and the love of creating. She said that for years, her creativity just dwindled because she got sucked dry from that conveyor belt mentality of creating stuff. Basically, she was creating product. She wasn't creating art. She was simply creating product.
Yeah, and that's definitely a recipe for stagnation as an artist.
That was one of my arguments with this person. It was like, listen, if that's what you want to do, if you want to approach that life, be aware of what that life entails. If you're happy with that because the financial benefits are good for you, then hey, by all means, please do that, pursue that, and good luck with that. For somebody like me who looks at that kind of thing and says, you know what, if I were doing that, I might as well just go and work a corporate job where I can make a lot of money, because then in that case, I'm not creating for the sake of creating, I'm creating because there is a need that needs to be met, and my managers are telling me that I need to do this job and I need to do it by this time and by that time. And I just don't want to live like that. I would much rather cultivate my own audience, cultivate my own following, and eventually have those gatekeepers approach me and have those deals be on my terms rather than the other way around, because I'm already known for being who I am. I would much rather be in a position where I could turn a big name gallery down than to be in a position where I am chasing after them and doing whatever it is that they want me to do in order for me to feel like a successful artist.
Yeah, and in that scenario, you've already established yourself as a rule breaker and a rabble rouser, and so a gallery would know right off the bat what they're getting into. And if they want your art, then they know.
Yeah. In the How to Get Into an Art Gallery video, it's not about getting into a gallery. It's about putting yourself in a position. And it takes time to get there, but it's about putting yourself in a position where you don't need a gallery. In this day and age, you don't need a gallery. We don't need to follow that old requisite of the way that things were, where you have to go through this gatekeeper and this gatekeeper and this gatekeeper in order to make a name for yourself.
Yeah, it's true. 20 years ago, you really did need representation because there weren't other options available to you. Nowadays, there are tons of options available to you. And the fact of the matter is, those gatekeepers, those galleries, those insider art people, they don't want you to pursue those avenues, obviously.
Right.
The old guard is doing whatever it can to hang on to the way that things were because that works for them. But you don't need those things, and times are changing, and I think there's some resistance, as there usually is resistance when things change, to adapting new ways of thinking.
If anybody out there is interested in seeing what the art market is like, you can watch that documentary that is on Netflix called Blurred Lines.
It Oh, yeah.
really gives a great representation of what's going on with the art market and why the art market is so unattainable. What's even going on with galleries? And I'm not saying that like all the galleries out there are like that. A lot of the local galleries In fact, the majority of the business in the art market is pretty legit. It is all about local art. It is about local galleries and artists and pairing up artists with those collectors out there that are interested. But as far as like the ones that make the news are going to be the ones that sell for $100,000. They're going to be the ones that sell for $1 million. We're going to be talking about old masters. We're going to be talking about all these underground deals and all these illegal happenings and these inflated prices on artwork. That's what I've done. I've questioned, do I really want to become part of that art world? I would much rather create my own art world. There are plenty of art collectors out there that are tastemakers that are not part of this art commodities market. There are plenty of art collectors out there that have never collected art and are collecting art for the first time.
I'd like to address the topic of the serious collector versus the illegitimate art collector?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he was getting at. I think it was just a jab at me saying like, well, I'm pretty sure the comment was something like, I'm pretty sure that none of your so-called collectors are genuine art collectors.
Okay, so the genuine art collector. Here's the flaw in that thinking. If your art were to gain global notoriety on a large scale, either during your lifetime or after you pass, all of a sudden your illegitimate art collectors are now tastemakers.
Exactly.
And they were visionaries because they saw your talent before everyone else did. And then those people will be lauded for their forethought and they're jumping on before everyone else.
Exactly. I mean, and there are stories of that in the art world. You've got the Vogels that collected who knows how many millions of dollars worth of artwork, and they were not considered tastemakers, yet everyone, every single event that there was, they went to those events because they had such a huge collection. It didn't matter. They weren't these people that were exclusive in the art world. They were people that just collected art because they liked it and they thought it was beautiful. In fact, he would go and visit studios and he'd see like a scrap of something on the floor that the artist had used in creating something. And he would say, how much do you want for that?
I love the story of the Vogels, and I was going to bring them up too, because they were not part of the in crowd in the beginning. They were not buying paintings for financial reasons. They were not wealthy, and they were not affluent people. They just bought paintings because they liked them, and they amassed one of the largest, most important art collections that we know of today.
That's where that comment really bothered me, because I love my collectors. I absolutely adore my collectors, and I feel like most of my collectors are tastemakers within their own specific region. This person made it seem like they were not important, and that was my response to his comment. It's like, listen, I don't value one human over another human. I value all humans, and especially if they're collecting my artwork, then they are deep in my heart. I am not going to chase after someone to collect my artwork simply because I think that they have more value than someone else. That's bullshit. That's what sat with me really, really wrong about that statement. But it also made me realize that that's kind of the way that a lot of artists see the art world.
Dollar signs.
Yeah, dollar signs. They're looking at dollar signs over a specific person, and this person is the person that I got to get my artwork in front of, and this is the person that I got to get my artwork in front of so that I can have more opportunity. Instead of it just being about sharing your art and communicating your voice out into the world and really cherishing anybody that is listening and looking at your art and becoming a collector or becoming a follower, that gets lost in that. It's all about the dollar signs. And honestly, in my mind, it's like, okay, well, that's fine. You do what you got to do, but you're kind of like a chaser of tastemakers. That's what you become.
Yeah. In that realm, your goal is to become a commodity. It definitely feels a little dirty to me, and it sort of loses the beauty that is the creation of art for art's sake and the collecting of art for love's sake. I think the music industry is a little ahead of the power curve, and that's why I'm always looking at the music industry, because indie music, independent music, is a recognized genre now.
Right.
It wasn't before, now it is. And I think the music industry, people started to realize, I don't know, a decade or so ago, that they could do it on their own. Is Macklemore a reputable artist? Refused to sign to a label, did it all himself. Is he part of the scourge of the music world? I would say no.
No.
I have mad respect for artists like that that do it themselves. It doesn't make you illegitimate if you don't follow the traditional path.
No, but I also think that that was not a possibility about 20 years ago.
Right.
And so things are changing. The difference is when it comes to the music world and the art world is that there is billions of dollars being exchanged every year in the art market. And you're not dealing with publishing companies and just galleries. You know, you're dealing with people that are buying artwork and selling artwork in essentially a very unregulated stock market, because there is no regulations to regulate the art market. There just isn't.
There's a whole lot of fraud and weird things happening in that world.
Exactly. People are collecting certain art by a certain artist. They're inflating the price and then, you know, when to sell. It's the same thing as like, I'm holding on to this stock until it's a good time to sell. And that's the way that it's run. And there's a lot of illegal stuff going on in the background. And there's a lot of trickery. And there's a lot of all of that stuff involved with very high ticket, high dollar items. And when you're dealing with a market like that, where it is a central few that are making money off of that, when you think of the stock market, there's all this corruption that goes on in the stock market, right? Mm-hmm. And the stock market is regulated. So imagine an unregulated stock market. That's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with these auctions at Christie's and when you're dealing with these high ticket items and a lot of the old masters. That's what it's become. And that's what this person was saying, was that that's the art that will leave an impact forever.
Man, somebody should have told Van Gogh that.
And what I told him was, I could give a crap what happens to my art after I die. This is not because I want to leave a long-lasting legacy of art out there and that I want my art to be traded for millions of dollars. That is not why I'm creating art. A, I'm not going to enjoy the millions of dollars because I'll be dead. And B, as far as leaving a lasting impression, I want to leave a lasting impression by the way that I lived my life. And so this person said that, oh, well, these tastemakers, none of these, your artwork will basically become extinct. And the truth of that is that I have sold over 1,000 works of art that are all out there in the world, in people's collections, hanging on buildings, hanging in businesses, hanging all over the world. And I have no idea what will happen with that art after I die. Either some pieces will become famous, some pieces won't. They might be selling at a flea market, they might be selling at a thrift store, they might end up in the garbage. I mean, I don't care. What cares, what my legacy is the people who I have formed a connection with, the stories that I have created within myself and the life that I've lived and how much I was able to put myself out there while I was alive, how much I was able to enjoy my life while I was alive. If my life was able to inspire someone else while I was alive, then that to me is all I need in order to leave a legacy.
Yeah, and that is not quantifiable in dollar amounts.
No. No, that's what it comes down to. I create my art because I am trying to brighten the world. I am writing this book because I am trying to brighten the world. I am writing music and living my life the way that I'm living my life because I am trying to brighten the world. That is the legacy that I want to leave. And like you said, it's not quantifiable. And it's definitely not in dollar amounts. That is not the legacy that I'm going. Picasso's paintings are secondary to how much it's sold. Most people don't even care what the painting looks like. They're just looking at the dollar amount.
Yeah, and they forget that in Picasso's time, it was degenerate art. It offended people, and it was so emotionally impactful that it created an entire movement.
All of those movements were a joke, and it wasn't like the tastemakers were like, yeah, let me get this and make it whatever. They were turning it down just the same way that everybody else was. The relationships that formed and the things that made these artists stand out was not something that they pursued. It was relationships that they developed. And how do you develop a relationship with a tastemaker or not a tastemaker, or whatever it is that people want to call them, with a collector, is one-on-one. You develop a relationship. That's it. You don't single somebody out. You just develop a relationship with as many beautiful collectors, people that are attracted to your art because it speaks to them. And thus, you already have a relationship. You already have an icebreaker there. And that's the way that you have a tastemaker, somebody who loves your art and they talk about your art. That's what a tastemaker is.
I think the bottom line is you don't know who the tastemakers 10 years from now are going to be. They're maybe working at a gas station
exactly.
right now.
Exactly.
Saving up their money to buy their first piece of art, or they don't even know that they like art yet. Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen with your art, who's going to collect it, and what's going to happen after that. So you better be in it for the right reasons, because who you are does matter. And the legacy that you leave behind is really mostly how people felt when interacting with you.
I couldn't agree more. And that being said, you guys know the best way to run your art business. These are our opinions. So to that person that left me that, hey, like I said in the message to you, you know what's best for you. You pursue that. And make the best of it and have a good time. If you want to pursue the big name tastemakers, then absolutely go and do that. It's not my shtick. It's not the thing that I want to do. And I've put a lot of thought into it. All right, and that's it. And tomorrow we'll be posting a video on YouTube where I'll be talking about one of the chapters in the book that correlates with one of the questions that we got. So
cool.
And thank you so much for listening, you guys. You guys are absolutely freaking amazing. I totally adore you. We adore you.
Yes, we do.
Basically, this is just Clea and I sitting down, having some coffee, having a conversation about what's going on in the art world or what's going on within our art world
yes.
and career. So, yeah, we want to share that with you. And that way you could join us for coffee every Monday afternoon. And that's it for now. We'll talk to you next Monday. Adios.
Good day.